Welcome to Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Moran, Editorial Director of Fixed Income News Australia. Join me as I talk about the latest news, views and education in fixed income investment. I'll be joined by industry experts from Australia and across the globe.
Welcome everybody, Ben Reedy here. I'm one of the co-founders of Fixed Income News Australia. I'll be sitting behind the microphone as the host of our Fixated podcast today in place of my fellow co-founder and usual host, Liz Moran. We've got a great guest with us today talking about something we don't usually cover at FINA, and that is a new variable rate fixed income product from Queensland-based funds management group, ZFMG Capital. I'm joined by the company's general manager, Andrew Thompson, who has been a property and financial service executive for more than 20 years, including more than 10 years with ZFMG. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Mate, just quickly before we jump into having a bit of a chat about the fund, just give me a quick rundown about CFMG. How long have you been around? How's the business structured? What's your main sort of business divisions?
Yeah, look, CFMG Capital began operating back in early 2008. So obviously ran into some headwinds in its first couple of years with the GFC. But once we got through that, we essentially were a fund manager and a land developer. And those businesses operate hand in hand. So initially the projects were funded, or the funds management was via a syndication model. And then in about 2014, we moved into our current sort of managed fund structure. And over that time, we've had introduced various products across our portfolio, and which is the latest one we're here to talk about, which is a monthly income fund. Those previous ones, or they can see, our flagship fund continues to be our land and opportunity fund, which is basically an indirect investment or a loan structure into our residential land developments that we do across the eastern seaboard. But that's all sort of paid on maturity at completion of projects and directly linked to those project performances, whereas a monthly income fund is exactly as it's designed to be, or as it's named, which will be paying a monthly income, and it's actually secured via first mortgage security over each project within that portfolio.
Tell me a little bit about the portfolio. You're obviously you're a land developer. You don't do apartments, you don't do industrial, you don't do commercial. It's purely a land-based development business in sort of growth areas around Queensland and Victoria.
Yep. So we've specialised in land development. There's been temptation over 16 years of operation to move into some of those other areas, but we've sort of chosen to just stick with, I guess, where our expertise lies, what we know, and what we view, and certainly in our opinion, what is the lowest risk in terms of development. So particularly when if you do run into headwinds, if you've got a 300 lot land development and the market's a bit slow, or you're not sure about construction prices, you can stage that into 300 lot stages, 650 lot stages, 30-10 lot stages, whatever you like. Obviously, with a high-rise development, once you've dug your hole and put your foundations in and you're halfway up, you got to build the whole thing no matter what. And there's no income until that high-rise is finished. And I guess for a land development, it's very different being able to stage both your costs and your income.
Tell me a little about the team there in terms of the structure of the team and how the two businesses work together, the funds management side and the land development side. How do they work together?
Yeah, so the land development side, we're not really doing anything different to anyone else. We've got a team that's been involved in land development, including myself, in large ASX listed organisations. Our project managers are all Stockland ex-project directors and things like that. Yeah, I wouldn't say we're doing anything special. We're just a residential land developer that's doing exactly what everyone else is doing in terms of securing sites. We think we're doing a good job, and we're securing good sites in good locations with good margins. But I guess the point of difference is how those developments are funded. Every developer is different in terms of their funding structure. But for us, as a sort of integrated, vertically integrated business where we have skin in the game, so we run the fund, we raise that capital, we deploy that capital into those projects. And obviously, we have a unique interest in investment in how those projects perform, whereas other businesses do similar things to us. They don't do both. So there might be a fund manager that raises capital and deploys capital into land developments, but those land developments are operated by a third-party developer. And they, other than just deploying capital into those developments, they don't have any say or any particular skin in the game in the outcome of that project. Whereas for us, we're both managing the fund and delivering the projects, so have unique insights on a day-to-day basis and can move strategically on a day-to-day basis in the performance of those projects versus, relying on monthly meetings, relying on the information coming from the developer back to you as a lender. That might happen in that private debt market.
Is one of the benefits having that sort of look-through transparency of the minute detail of the project between the funds management business, having that look-through and being able to see all the opportunities, all of the risks involved with individual projects?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we think that's a huge feather in the cap compared to, there's two schools of thought in that area. Some might see it as a risk as a being a one-stop shop, but others see it as, well, if you're vertically integrated, you've got complete control over that performance of that project. And not only that, your performance of your business is reliant on the outcomes of that project. Whereas if you're a fund manager that's just lent it off to another developer, if that goes bad, the developer might go under or such. And then you're, you know, in a position where you've got to call in loans, things like that. For us, if a project goes bad or something like that, where it affects our whole business, so we're uniquely invested in the outcomes of every project.
Moving on to the fund now, give me some of the headline numbers in terms of the target return you're looking at, the amount you want to raise, and where those funds are going to be deployed to.
Yeah, so for the monthly income fund, I guess it's probably important to give a little bit more history with that portfolio. So we've operated upwards of 30 projects over the last 15 years across Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. And we've delivered 100% of the targeted return via the different funds we've operated 100% of the time without fail. So got a perfect track record.
Those returns have ranged there from sort of 7-8% up to 12.
Anywhere from 7 to 12. Yeah. And they've always been an advertised targeted return and we've met that targeted return. The ones down around that 7% mark were first mortgage income funds that were paid on a quarterly basis or continue to be paid on a quarterly basis. And those ones are a little bit different in their structure where they're not actually, those first mortgage income funds are not invested directly in development. They're used to secure either future development assets or development assets that are complete and we have some residual stock. Whereas our Landed Opportunity Fund was sort of an unsecured fund with a rate consistent with that, that ranges to sort of 10 to 12%. So the average return on that over the lifespan of that fund, I think is about 11.1%. Whereas with the first mortgage and income fund, it sits at around 6.9, early sevens. But the simplest answer there is whatever we've advertised, we've delivered. Where the monthly income fund comes in is it's essentially the underlying asset are the loans, so not the projects themselves. However, those loans are going to be secured by registered first mortgages over those project sites. So we've got approximately 1,800 lots across Southeast Queensland and Victoria currently that we've secured. They've got an on-completion value of about $650 million, and there's at least 5 to 6 years current supply for our land development business through those that current portfolio. The target return to start with will be 8.25%, and then the amount we're looking to grow to about circa $200 million, and that's based on a 70% LVR across the existing portfolio projects we have on hand.
And how does that target rate vary? Is it month to month? Is it quarterly? Is it changed annually? What's the minimum investment term?
So the target rate will change as the rates from the loans forming the loan portfolio change over time. And that'll generally be in accordance with underlying rates offered in the private credit market. So we're not looking to pay significantly more or significantly less than what that private debt space are or is. So we'll be sitting, you know, generally in accordance with that range. In terms of sort of exiting the fund, the initial holding period will be 12 months. After the initial holding period, withdrawal requests will be processed monthly. And then so any received sort of say 7 business days prior to the last calendar day of the month, we process at the first calendar day the following month and paid 20 calendar days after that.
So it's a 12-month minimum term, but redemptions you can do after that 12 months or you can let it sit.
Roughly 30 days after that.
Yep. And tell me about the fees.
So the fees, I mean, I guess it's important that all the returns are net of fees, but there's an asset ID fee that could be up to 4.4% of funds raised by the issue of units in the trust. Ongoing management fee is about 1.1% per annum of funds invested. And then the predicted admin costs be 0.55% of funds invested.
And as you said, the return is net of those fees.
Yeah. So the return's net of those fees. Well, it's good to know the fees. At the end of the day, most investors are interested in what they're getting in their pocket.
Can we just, again, I want to revisit the underlying assets, what the investors are actually investing in. You get the money and where does it end up going to?
The money is deployed as a registered first mortgage secured loan to fund construction within those development projects. So we've got, I think, in the current portfolio, there's 9 active or future projects. And this would be basically private debt to fund construction within those projects up to a maximum LVR of 70%. And they're funded on a cost to complete basis. Valuations are carried out by a panel of independent valuers. And the cost to complete is assessed by a panel of independent quantity surveyors.
Yeah, I suppose that's important as well when you've got the two businesses, land development and the funds management business, having that sort of independent eye over those valuations.
Yeah, I mean, the board has a majority of independent directors and they manage the fund's liquidity because it is a liquid fund. And those board members, they've been in place for close to 10 years. One is he's now a professional director. He's a chartered accountant, operated large accounting firm. Another one's a former regional commissioner for ASIC, and he manages our compliance obligations and ethical obligations as well. And then we've also got a guy who runs his own valuation firm, and he's provide his advice on that valuation structure and outcomes. But obviously we don't use we're not able to use his valuation firm to complete any of the valuations. But, you know, it's good to get a nice independent and experienced eye over the valuation process.
Yeah. And will the initial funds as they come in, will they be used to create new loans, or will they be used to pay out existing loans? How much is already on the loan book?
It'll be a mixture of both. So if we've got an active project right now where we might have a first mortgage debt funding construction with one of the major banks, typically we've used Westpac, NAB, ANZ and Suncorp. Some of the initial ones, we'll pay out those and they'll replace that debt. And then some of the newer projects where we haven't commenced construction and made any drawdowns on any potential loans, they'll be the first registered mortgage on those projects.
So it's all senior secured loans where the investors have the first rights?
Yes. Yep. So the loans will have a full first registered security mortgage over the asset in question.
We've already had a quick chat about the exit for funds. What sort of covenants are in place to protect investors in the deals and the loans? How do you act in the best interests of the investors when, say one of these projects doesn't go to plan, gets washed out, there's delays and approvals? How do you manage that sort of risk?
It's across the whole portfolio because this is a pooled fund. So each individual loan sits in this pooled scheme. But as I said earlier, the loans are at a maximum of 70% LVR. There's first mortgage security funded on a cost to complete basis. If there is a project that is experiencing, whether it's a delay, a construction cost increase, we'll manage those delays or those issues on an individual basis with each project. So as I said earlier, so we might change the staging of a project. There's even opportunities considering with the LVR of 70%, we may choose to exit a project, sell it at its valuation. There's so many levers you can pull in a development. You can change the lot delivery or the makeup of the master plan. You can create super lots to get cash in quickly. So say if you've, as I said earlier, if you've got a 300 lot development that you plan to develop in three 100 lot stages, if you want to get some cash in the door quickly for whatever reason, you may choose to develop one of 100 lots first or 50 lots first, but you can carve off 100 lots as a super lot and sell that to another developer as a development site to get cash in the door if there's any reason to do that.
Now, obviously, moving over to the land market, which is obviously the biggest risk, people are investing in the land market. How are things tracking in Southeast Queensland at the moment, where I think most of your projects are?
Yeah, currently we are heavily weighted to Southeast Queensland. That's not a function of the fact that obviously the business is Southeast Queensland based. Most of the staff are Southeast Queensland based. That's just a function of where we think the market's strongest. Obviously, through 2021, back end of 2020, through that pandemic era, there was a very strong boom. Certainly for us, we were able to sell in excess of 3 to 4 years pipeline and in a 12 to 18 month period. There was a quietening process through 2022 and early through to three quarters of the way through 2023. But even then, what people saw as a downturn was really just you couldn't possibly maintain the heights of 2020-21. And what I would just say, it would just return to a normal market. That market has now picked up, certainly on the back end of last year. Interest rates, I wouldn't say, no one really knows what's happening with the rates, but the monthly increases have certainly obviously stopped. That's brought some confidence back to the market. But at the end of the day, the underlying fundamentals of the residential land market in particular, in terms of just basically supply and demand and new infrastructure demands. You can't open the paper at the moment without someone telling us there's a housing crisis and we need to deliver more stock pretty much in every state. And, so we're in that nice sweet spot at the moment where we currently control approximately 2,000 lots ready to go over the next 5 years. And we're supplying a small, very small, almost minuscule amount of the stock that's required, or the demand versus the supply over that next 5 year period. And so that underlying fundamental of supply and demand is what drives the market right now. There's not a silly market where there's mass incentives or stimulus. It's just been driven by that basic requirement for people to put a roof over their head.
And what's sort of the profile of your average buyers? Is your product for sort of first home buyers in that 600,000-800,000 market, or is it second home buyers looking for a house and land package over $1 million? What's your sort of your core market?
Our core market is that first home buyer slash investor, who then would typically the tenants in those investor product are people looking to buy their first home, or certainly young families. We do, it is project specific though. We have some projects, you know, sitting in the inner city ring that are what we call infill projects. Those ones have a completely different buyer profile, upwards of 1.5 million. They're much smaller projects. So, but in terms of revenue, they might 20 lot project in a location like that might actually have the same revenue as an 80 lot project in the outer ring. But yeah, our typical buyer, you know, 80% to 90% of our stock sits in that pioneering market on the outer rim of the major capital cities. So we're talking places like Logan, Caboolture, Bellemere, which is sort of Caboolture West. And then in Melbourne, typically we've been in places like Melton, Pakenham, Narre Warren, which is probably more of an infill development site now. And then we've got, you know, our current portfolio down there is in Wollert, so Epping, and then out at Sunbury, sort of northwest of the airport.
And what sort of risk do you see to the market at the moment? There's obviously interest rates have been the big factor over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. What do you see over the next sort of next 12 to 18 months as it looks like interest rates might stabilise? Queensland economy seems to be growing well. Population is growing well in Queensland. What do you see as sort of the major risks?
The biggest risk is probably just basically government red tape and affordability. So the more red tape that is in place or that you as a developer you face, that drives up costs. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, developers pass on those costs to the end buyer. Most all developers, we're not unique. We're operating on a baseline margin that we like to meet. And that margin's function of the loans that need to be repaid, the profit that you're, you know, no one's doing it for fun. If particularly in, say, I'll give you an example, Bellemere, which is an outer rim suburb north west of Caboolture. If you, so out there, you might be paying infrastructure charges up to almost $100,000 per block because the amount of infrastructure that needs to be delivered in a new location. Whereas we have a project sort of 15, 20 kilometres in a place called Burpengary, and our infrastructure charges are capped at sort of $30,000 to $40,000. So while Bellemere should be significantly more affordable than Burpengary based on the fact that it's 20, 30Ks out and it's a brand new suburb. Once you put all those charges and costs into play, the buyers are end up going to pay almost the same on a square meter rate per block. So that drives that affordability piece. But at the end of the day, as I said earlier, like the demand overcomes all of that. And there are, you know, significant interest from interstate investors as well. We like to sell to local owner occupiers, but sometimes people think investment or investment sales are a dirty word, but we don't believe so because certainly that market's changed over the last 15 years that sort of I've been in this game where, you know, investors these days get turnkey homes, they're live ready, and they're presented well, they're maintained well, and they provide good opportunities for people looking for a secure rental property. And if investors aren't building homes, renters have got nowhere to live.
It's the story across the country, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today, Andrew. Good luck with the fund. And anybody wishing to learn more about it can visit the CFMG website.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for joining us this week on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. Still hungry for more fixed income news, views and education? Then visit fixedincomenews.com.au and don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter to have the latest news delivered right to your inbox. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Elizabeth Moran and we'll see you next episode on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast.